Finance. The invisible foot? More even than the future of Britain in 1914, the economic trajectory of the United States was in the hands of the financial sector. Chapter 9 developed some of the historical reasons for concern, despite the talk of a new economic paradigm. Finance by itself has never been enough to sustain a leading world economic power. Multi-billionaire investor Warren Buffett, known for his dismissal of finance as a den of vanity and profiteering, occasionally extended his mockery to Adam Smith's famous invisible hand and its supposed role in guiding markets to optimal outcomes, as we have seen. To Buffett, finance was no such boon. He first said as much in his 1983 annual message to Berkshire Hathaway shareholders. Hyperactive equity markets subvert rational capital allocation and act as pie shrinkers. Adam Smith felt that all non-collusive acts in a free market were guided by an invisible hand that led an economy to maximum progress. Our view is that casino-type markets and hair-trigger investment management act as an invisible foot that trips up and slows down a forward-moving economy. Since then, although the Nebraskan's own fortune swelled to become the nation's second biggest, his comments on the financial sector remained disdainful. Derivatives were financial weapons of mass destruction, and credit default swaps were a time bomb. On top of this, he said that huge trade deficits threatened to turn the United States into a sharecropper society, a mockery of White House talk about an ownership society. In a 2005 letter to his shareholders, Buffett grumbled that, in effect, the rest of the world enjoys an ever-growing royalty on the American output. Here we are like a family that consistently overspends its income. As time passes, the family finds that it is working more and more for the finance company and less for itself. For Buffett, the invisible foot was kicking even harder. Whether Smith or Buffett had the better analogy may depend on the outcome of a second new private debt expansion, undertaken by the financial sector, that exceeded even the credit card and mortgage escalation of household indebtedness. Between 1995 and 2004, financial sector domestic debt soared from $4.33 trillion to $11.79 trillion. In 1980, financial sector debt had been a mere $700 billion. This gargantuan increase explained much more than just the fin de siècle stock boom and bust. A rare convergence was at work, with a newly deregulated and ambitious financial sector taking advantage of the deregulation in 1996 of two other industries, merchant energy and telecommunications. The three-sector collusion created some $4 trillion in new bond and loan debt in the second half of the 1990s, the issuance of which peaked between 1998 and 2000 alongside the stock market indexes. Together with a seemingly endless parade of financial mergers and buccaneering hedge funds, and the deployment of a new array of speculative and derivative instruments and strategies, the result was what amounted to a grand financial sector takeover of the economy. In the fall of 1996, Foreign Policy published an article by John C. Edmonds, an academic economist, grandly entitled Securities, the New Wealth Machine. Under the banner of securitization, the bundling of related or eclectic loans into asset-backed securities, ABSs, the author hypothesized a new age in which a nation could increase its wealth by enlarging, through innovative structuring, the market valuation of its production assets. Producing more goods and services wasn't actually necessary. While the jury is still out on the new age, ABSs were clearly an idea whose profitability had come. And they had a lot of company. The torrent of new debt-related instruments and borrowing was central in lifting the relative weight of financial services from some 15% of GDP in 1980 to 20% in 2000, thereby staking out a clear predominance for the sector in stock market capitalization after the NASDAQ debacle. The most important new instruments, far more complex structurally than the asset-backed securities of the early 1990s, were the categories of credit default swaps, CDSs, and collateralized debt obligations, CDOs, both sold by banks over the counter rather than traded through exchanges. The first allowed investors to insure the credit risk of their bond and loan holdings. The second represented purchasable pools of corporate credit divided into three or more layers to reflect varying degrees of risk. Despite the complexity of CDOs, which required extensive documentation by their bank issuers, credit derivatives became so popular that their global market expanded from embryonic status in 1997 to greater than $1 trillion in 2001, well over $3 trillion in 2003, and projected $8 trillion in 2006. Pricing these instruments is subjective, and they are illiquid to boot, making the potential cost of any debacle that requires their panic sale chilling. Similarly, while the combined derivatives markets grew to a nominal value of $270 trillion in 2004, no one knew what they would really be worth in a panic.